Today we're going to be going over Joshua, son of Nun. But one thing I was hoping to do just real quick, and we hadn't done it in a while, and that was just ask as a group if there are any prayer requests or anything we can be praying for y'all for this week and that kind of stuff. No, you guys have the week off as far as Awana goes and that kind of stuff this week, though the Wednesday night stuff will be starting up. But are there any other kind of prayer requests? That
pray for our Awana missionaries. I know they're trying to work out some details of some things.
Okay. Anything else? Do what? Oh, the travelers, our travelers. We can do that too. But there's something else too. Just let me know, and I'll be happy to add that to our list of things. But let's start this morning with a word of prayer real quick. Father, we count a privilege again to start this new year in your house, to say we love you and to hear your word. We'd ask this day, Lord, that you would meet with us in a special way. Teach us and instruct us and correct us, Lord, as you see fit. Thank you again for being able to come in here and sing your praises and honor you and glorify you. Thank you for loving us and all that you provide, God. For it's in Jesus' name we pray. Amen. Joshua, son of Nun, that's who we're going to be talking about today. And the goals that I'm hoping we can accomplish in our class today is to gain a little bit more knowledge about Joshua's life, just from a purely knowledge standpoint, but also to identify challenges in our own lives with those of the challenges faced by Joshua. Kind of see what he went through and how that corresponds to the things that we go through in our life. And then with that in mind, to face our challenges with strength and courage with our dependency upon the Lord. I'm not saying just meet these things head on and we'll take the bull by the horn kind of thing, but realize that it's God who leads us and guides us and takes care of those things. So walking hand in hand with God instead of either walking ahead of him or behind him or something like that, but walking with the Lord. Now with that in mind, I have the picture of Joshua up there. Y'all recognize what that was from?
Ben-Hur.
Do what? Not Ben-Hur. What was it?
The Ten Commandments.
The Ten Commandments. Okay, bonus question. What was the name of the actor that portrayed Joshua in the Ten Commandments?
John Derrick.
Very good. Now, the bonus question. What year was this made? It was before I was born. That's a hint.
1958.
Close. Take two off of that and you get what? 56. Oh. 1956 was John Derrick. Now, Joshua's given name was Hoshea, which means salvation. And then Moses changed his name to Joshua, meaning God is salvation. Morning, Miss Hannah. Now, I'm going to kind of jump ahead a little bit. We know that Joshua lived to be 110 years old. And the events in Joshua cover about 30 years. So if it's about 30 years that the book of Joshua covers, and we know that Joshua kind of takes over leading Israel at the beginning of Joshua, how old was he when he took control, Trent? How old was he, Trent? He died at 110. He served for about 30 years, so how old was he when he started? 80. Close. And Joshua was about 40 years old when the Exodus occurred also. So if we take 40 years off that. So I guess the whole point of this is I'm trying to say that Joshua wasn't necessarily a little kid when they came out for the Exodus. And also, Joshua was born into slavery. You can kind of infer that he had good parents simply because of the life that he led, obeying the Lord and seeking the Lord. No, I don't know that for sure, but you can kind of infer that he had good parents. The one thing that I kind of like about this is Joshua is always referred to as the son of Nun. Whenever you read about him, it's typically Joshua, the son of Nun. And I think part of that's because there were so many Joshuas, it was a common name, and so to distinguish him, it was Joshua, son of Nun. However, I'd like to think that on a day like today, up in heaven somewhere, there's none. And he's up there, and those heavenly hosts are looking down upon us today, and Nun's giving an elbow to Moses, saying, "Hey, Moses, they're talking about my little boy today." I have no idea if that's true or not, but I like to think that kind of thing. And again, Joshua was about 80 years old when Moses passed away. So that's where we are. That's the type of time frame we're talking about, the life of Joshua and the things that he's going to be going through. Now we're going to first talk about Joshua in Exodus 17. Now the children of Israel, before we get too far into this story, the children of Israel have just left Egypt. Okay, so they're taken off across Egypt. They're complaining already. Moses, we're thirsty out here. We need something to drink. So Moses is going to go to the rock. He's going to strike the rock, and water's going to come from the rock, and the children are going to get all types of water and get satisfied like that. So that's good, children of Israel, that is. But what's going on also is this guy named Amalek. He's kind of a rotten scoundrel who's starting to attack the children of Israel, but he's sneaky. He doesn't take on a frontal assault kind of thing head on. What he's going to do is he's going to nip everybody at the tail end. So he's going to get the stragglers, the guys who are tired, the slower ones, and he's going to start attacking the children of Israel that way. Moses gets kind of fed up, and then it says, "Then Amalek came and fought against Israel at Rephidim. So Moses said to Joshua, 'Choose men for us and go out and fight against Amalek. Tomorrow I will station myself on the top of the hill with a staff of God in my hand.' Joshua did as Moses told him and fought against Amalek, and Moses and Aaron and Hur went up on top of the hill." And y'all know the rest of the story. As Moses is on top of the hill, they're fighting down below. Moses holds up his arms with his staff. And as long as he has his arms up, everything's good. Israel's winning. Moses starts getting tired, and those arms start falling down, and all of a sudden, Israel stops winning. Amalek starts winning. Well, Aaron gets on one side, Hur gets on the other, and they prop up his arms, and Israel wins the battle. So that's the first meeting that we have with Joshua. And again, he's around 40, 45 years old, something like that. Next time we talk about this is going to be in Exodus 33. In Exodus 33, it says, "Now Moses used to take a tent and pitch it outside the camp some distance away, calling it the tent of meeting. And anyone inquiring of the Lord would go to the tent of meeting outside the camp. And whenever Moses went out to the tent, all the people rose and stood at the entrances of their tent, watching Moses until he entered the tent. As Moses went into the tent, the pillar of cloud would come down and stay at the entrance while the Lord spoke with Moses. Whenever the people saw the pillar of cloud standing at the entrance to the tent, they all stood and worshipped, each at the entrance of their tent. The Lord would speak to Moses face to face as one speaks to a friend. Then Moses would return to the camp, but his young aide, Joshua, son of Nun, did not leave the tent." I put this up there just to demonstrate one of the character qualities of Joshua. Simply that he enjoyed, that tent represented Yahweh on earth, and that's where Joshua wanted to be. Joshua wanted to be near God. Not with the rest of the people, that's where he wanted to be, was with God. So that was kind of an insight into Joshua's life, his relationship with the Lord. But then also in Numbers 11, it's going to talk to us there. And at this point, Moses has been kind of overwhelmed with the people. They've been complaining about just having manna to eat now, and now they want to have meat to eat. And Moses is wondering, how in the world am I going to take care of these people? And God tells him, "Well, choose 70 men to serve with you." And in Numbers 11:24, it tells us, "So Moses went out and told the people the words of the Lord. He gathered 70 men of the elders of the people and stationed them around the tent. Then the Lord came down in the cloud and spoke to him. And he took of the Spirit who was upon him and placed him upon the 70 elders. And when the Spirit rested upon them, they prophesied. But they did not do it again. But two men had remained in the camp. The name of one was Eldad, and the name of the other was Medad, and the Spirit rested upon them. Now they were among those who had been registered, but had not gone out to the tent, and they prophesied in the camp. So a young man ran and told Moses and said, Eldad and Medad are prophesying in the camp.'" Then Joshua, son of Nun, the attendant of Moses from his youth, said, "Moses, my Lord, restrain them." But Moses said to him, "Are you jealous for my sake? Would that all the Lord's people were prophets, that the Lord would put his spirit upon them." Then Moses returned to the camp, both he and the elders. And I simply put this in there to kind of illustrate the relationship that Moses had with Joshua. Joshua cared about Moses' image, and I guess I won't say image, but how the people viewed Moses. And he felt this was an affront to them. And Moses wasn't. Moses, as the Bible tells us, was the most humble man upon the earth. Moses wasn't intimidated whatsoever by these two men. And Joshua, he told Joshua, "Don't worry about that." But I do appreciate his concern for Moses. Numbers 13 is going to talk to us about the 12 spies. And this is kind of the aftermath of that. And again, just more about Joshua's character. Then Caleb quieted the people before Moses and said, "Why, we should by all means go up and take possession of it, for we will surely overcome it." But the men who had gone up with him said, "We are not able to go up against the people, for they are too strong for us." So they gave out to the sons of Israel a bad report of the land which they had spied out, saying, "The land through which we have gone in spying it out is a land that devours its inhabitants, and all the people whom we saw in it are men of great size. There also we saw the Nephilim, the son of Anak, are part of the Nephilim, and we became like grasshoppers in our own sight, and so we were in their sight." Joshua the son of Nun and Caleb the son of Jephunneh, of those who had spied out the land, tore their clothes, and they spoke to all the congregation of the sons of Israel, saying, "The land which we passed through to spy it out is an exceedingly good land. If the Lord is pleased with us, then he will bring us into this land and give it to us, a land which flows with milk and honey. Only do not rebel against the Lord, and do not fear the people of the land, for they will be our prey. Their protection has been removed from them, and the Lord is with us. Do not fear." But all the congregation said to stone them with stones. Then the glory of the Lord appeared in the tent of meeting to all the sons of Israel. This is the kind of people that Joshua's dealing with now. Remember, this is somewhat early on. They're ready to stone him because he spoke the truth. Even though he was Moses' servant, that didn't cut him any slack. So now we're going to fast forward about 38 years. So he spent all that time wandering through the desert with his difficult people. He's seen all their obedience, their disobedience, their grumblings, their murmurings. 38 years with this set of people. He's also witnessed the obedience and disobedience of Moses when Moses was supposed to simply speak to the rock and he saw him strike the rock and realizing that that was Moses' undoing as far as going into the promised land. And I'm sure that broke Joshua's heart as well. And then he's also gone through the process of mourning for the loss of everyone over the age of 20, including Aaron. So now pretty much everyone has passed away with the exception of Caleb. Caleb is still there with him, Joshua and Moses. But now it's getting towards the end of Moses' life. In Numbers 27, Moses spoke to the Lord saying, "May the Lord, the God of the spirits of all flesh, appoint a man over the congregation who will go out and come in before them, and who will lead them out and bring them in, so that the congregation of the Lord will not be like sheep which have no shepherd." I like the fact that Moses is already identifying people as sheep, similar to how Christ calls us his sheep. And the fact that sheep are just stupid sometimes, and that's they need a shepherd. So the Lord said to Moses, "Take Joshua the son of Nun, a man in whom is the Spirit, and lay your hand on him, and have him stand before Eleazar the priest and before all the congregation, and commission him in their sight. You shall put some of your authority on him in order that all the congregation of the sons of Israel may obey him. Moreover, he shall stand before Eleazar the priest, who shall inquire for him by judgment of the Urim before the Lord. At his command they shall go out, and at his command they shall come in, both he and the sons of Israel with him, even all the congregation. In Deuteronomy 31, it tells us, this is Moses now to Joshua. So Joshua's going to be the man. He's going to be the guy to take over. Moses is talking to him now in the sight of all Israel. He's going to say, then Moses called to Joshua and said to him in the sight of all Israel, be strong and courageous, for you shall go with this people into the land which the Lord has sworn to their fathers to give them, and you shall give to them an inheritance. The Lord is the one who goes ahead of you. He will be with you. He will not fail you or forsake you. Do not fear or be dismayed. Okay, guys, tell me, what's it mean to be courageous? Be strong and courageous. What's he trying to tell him?
Not afraid to do something.
Not afraid to do. Why would he tell him that, though? He's going to tell him again right here. He's going to say, then he commissioned Joshua, son of Nun, and said, be strong and courageous, or you shall bring the sons of Israel into the land which I swore to them, and I will be with you. So how many times has he told him, be strong and courageous now? A couple times, right? He said that, and then he said the kind of the opposite of it. He said, don't fear and don't be dismayed. Why would he tell him that, though? I think I put that next on there. Yeah, why? Why is he telling him that?
I think it would go back to the 12 spies. They all went out from just the truth.
Mm-hmm.
So it was obvious that that represented the entire nation rather than just those 12 people. And so I think he's trying to encourage the population as well as the leaders.
He's trying to encourage them, the leaders as well as the congregation, that, yeah, y'all are going to be taken off. I like that, Ron. Why else would he tell him that, repeat that to him? Hannah, why would he do that? Has your mom ever had to tell you something more than once? Or is it the first time and you got it just like that? Oh, yeah. I'll have that verified, you realize. Do we need to hear things more than once sometimes to get it in our heads? Yeah, we do. Also, think about what's happening here. Now then, I'm Joshua. I'm an Israelite. My great-great, however many times grandfather back there, Abraham, was told, I'm going to give you promise. I'm going to give you this land. God said, I'm going to give you this land. He told Abraham that. He told Isaac that. He told Jacob that. And now here you guys are. Y'all are sitting on the edge, getting ready to go into that promised land. All this work that's been done through Egypt, the captivity, all that stuff, and now you are the leader. You are going to make sure this promise happens. Do you think there's a little bit of fear maybe going on, Trent? Yeah, maybe just a little bit. Be strong and courageous. That's what's going to get you through this, not worrying about those things around you. Be strong and courageous. That's why he has to tell him. We're going to see those words again and again, guys. Now, it came about when Moses finished writing the words of this law in a book until they were completed, that Moses commanded the Levites who carried the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord, saying, take this book of the law and place it beside the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord your God, that it may remain there as a witness against you. Moses now is going to make this, say these words, which are probably something good for any CEO that's stepping down to make some kind of speech like this as well, because I think it would serve the guys coming in after him, because Joshua's really going to benefit from this. This is Moses talking, and he's telling the congregation now, for I know your rebellion and your stubbornness. Behold, while I am still alive with you today, you have been more rebellious against the Lord. How much more, then, after my death? Assemble for me all the elders of your tribes and your officers, that I may speak these words in their hearing and call the heavens and the earth to witness against them. For I know that after my death you will act corruptly and turn away from the way which I have commanded you, and evil will befall you in the latter days. For you will do that which is evil in the sight of the Lord, provoking him to anger with the work of your hands. So Joshua is, at that point, Moses is telling Joshua, I know you guys are bad. Don't do that. Don't do that for Joshua. In Joshua 1 now, we're going to read, now it came about after the death of Moses, the servant of the Lord, that the Lord spoke to Joshua, the son of Nun, Moses' servant, saying, Moses, my servant, is dead. Now therefore arise, cross this Jordan, you and all this people, to the land which I am giving to them, to the sons of Israel. Every place on which the sole of your foot treads, I have given it to you, just as I spoke to Moses. So now the torch has been passed. It's up to Joshua now to lead this people into the promised land. So what does he do? God goes on to say, from the wilderness of this Lebanon, even as far as the great river and the river Euphrates, all the land of the Hittites, as far as the great sea towards the setting of the sun, will be your territory. No man will be able to stand before you all the days of your life. Just as I have been with Moses, I will be with you. I will not fail you or forsake you. Be strong and courageous, for you shall give this people possession of the land which I swore to their fathers to give to them. Those words that Moses told him, now God is telling him. Get that in your head. Again, only be strong and very courageous. Be careful to do all the law which Moses, my servant, commanded you. Do not turn away from it to the right or to the left, so that you may have success wherever you go. This book of the law shall not depart from your mouth, but you shall meditate on it day and night, so that you may be careful to do according to all that is written in it. For then you will make your way prosperous, and then you will have success. Have I not commanded you? Be strong and courageous. Do not tremble or be dismayed, for the Lord your God is with you wherever you go. I think Joshua may have had an issue with confidence, maybe, with the death of Moses. He's telling him, I'm there with you. So that's verse 9. God told him, okay, the promised land is yours. What are you going to do now? That's in verse 9. In verse 10, we see, now Joshua, the son of Nun, was filled with the spirit of wisdom, for Moses had laid his hands on him, and the sons of Israel listened to him and did as the Lord had commanded Moses. Where did that one come from? That wasn't supposed to be there. This is what was supposed to be there. Then Joshua commanded the officers of the people, saying, pass through the midst of the camp and command the people, saying, prepare provisions for yourselves, for within 3 days you are to cross this Jordan to go and possess the land which the Lord your God is giving you to possess it. This is in verse 10. So God tells him in verse 7, 8, and 9, get up. Moses is dead. Go take the land. And now Joshua is getting up and he's doing it. He didn't say, okay, guys, 3 months from now, we'll make a plan to go over and maybe start taking it. No, the idea here is that he takes action with a plan. We're going to see as he goes through the land that there is a definite tactic that he's going through to conquer this land. It's not some haphazard manner that he's trying to do this. But the other thing I like about it, too, is that he's not delaying what he's supposed to do. God tells him to do it, and he does it. Now, this is kind of an aside also that I really appreciate from Joshua. And back in Numbers, the Reubenites and the Gadites and half the Manassites said, we are a huge tribe. Please don't make us go over there. We like this land on this side. We'll settle this area over here, and the other tribes can have that area over there. And Moses listens to them, and they decide, okay, we'll do that, but you guys are supposed to help clear out this promised land for these other 10 tribes, for your brothers. You're going to help take care of that first, and then you can have this land on this side that you want. So Joshua then goes and says to the Reubenites and to the Gadites and to the half the tribe of Manasseh, Joshua said, remember the word which Moses, the servant of the Lord, commanded you, saying, he's invoking Moses' name now, which Moses, the servant of the Lord, commanded you, saying, the Lord your God gives you rest and will give you this land. Your wives and your little ones and your cattle will remain in the land which Moses gave you beyond the Jordan. But you shall cross before your brothers in battle array, all your valiant warriors, and shall help them until the Lord gives your brothers rest as he gives you. And they also possess the land which the Lord your God is giving you. Then you shall return to your own land and possess it, possess that which Moses, the servant of the Lord, gave you beyond the Jordan towards the sunrise. So he's just reminding them of the promise that you made. Before Moses died, you told Moses you were going to help us clean house. Well, I'm holding you to it. I just thought that was a great tactic that he had to make sure that everyone was unified going across the land to accomplish the will that God had for them. Now in Joshua 4, 1 through 5 is going to be the crossing of the Jordan. And the interesting thing about the crossing of the Jordan, aside from the fact that they walked across dry land while doing it, is the fact that they, as they walked across, they were supposed to pick up a stone. One stone for each of the 12 tribes, and as they got to the other side, they erected this as a monument to the Lord. And so that was something that was accomplished then in Joshua 4. In Joshua 5, there's going to be a circumcision held. Out in the, you know, through the law, they were told to circumcise. Well, they hadn't had any type of circumcision ceremony in quite some time. So a lot of the males needed to be circumcised. So Joshua said, okay, get out the flint knives. We're going to do the circumcision. And that's what happened there. In Joshua 6, 2 through 6, is the Battle of Jericho. And Joshua is a somewhat of a military leader. But y'all know the story of Jericho, Battle of Jericho. It wasn't exactly some military conquest in terms of what they did, marching around the city and all this kind of thing. We sing the song and sparks and all that kind of fun stuff. But from a military standpoint, it's certainly not something that you'd expect to happen. But in all those things, he was obedient. And it wasn't just delayed obedience, it was immediate obedience in each of these examples that we read through Joshua. Some of it was conventional, some of it wasn't, but in all of it, Joshua obeyed. But Joshua is also human. The Battle of Ai, and y'all know the Battle of Ai. They just get through with Jericho. They look down the road to see Ai is the next target for us. We don't need to take everybody there, but we'll need to take some of the guys there. So they go in battle. The battle doesn't go well. They lose. As a result of that, then Joshua tore his clothes and fell to the earth on his face before the ark of the Lord until the evening, both he and the elders of Israel, and he put dust on their heads. Joshua said, alas, O Lord God, why did you ever bring this people over the Jordan, only to deliver us into the hand of the Amorites to destroy us? If only we had been willing to dwell beyond the Jordan. O Lord, what can I say, since Israel has turned their back on their before their enemies? For the Canaanites and all the inhabitants of the land will hear of it, and they will surround us and cut off your name from the earth. What will you do for your great name? God, you let us down. How could this have happened? Well, God responds. So the Lord said to Joshua, rise up. Why is it that you've fallen on your face? Israel has sinned. They have also transgressed my covenant, which I commanded them. And they have taken some of the things under the ban and have both stolen and deceived. Moreover, they have also put them among their own things. Therefore, the sons of Israel cannot stand before their enemies. They turn their backs before their enemies, for they have become accursed. I will not be with you anymore unless you destroy the things under the ban from your midst. So God didn't fail us. It was us that failed, huh? So Joshua rose early in the morning and brought Israel near by tribes, and the tribe of Judah was taken. And y'all know the rest of the story. It came down, who was it that sinned, guys? Who blew it and made them lose the Battle of Ai? Who was it? Achan, that's right. Achan was the guy that was identified. Achan and his family were taken out and stoned. Again, the whole idea is that Joshua did just as the Lord had told him to do at that point. Yeah, there was sin that had to be dealt with, and Joshua dealt with it. But the idea, too, is that he got back up on the horse. Instead of wallowing in a bunch of self-pity, wondering, what are we going to do now? God told him, look, the problem's not me, it's you. And he dealt with it. Immediately, getting back up on the horse, how does it apply to us today? Well, John tells us, and y'all remember this verse, 1 John 2:1, my little children, I am writing these things to you that you may not sin. And if anyone sins, we have an advocate with the Father, Jesus Christ the righteous. And he himself is our propitiation for our sins, and not ours only, but also for those of the whole world. Joshua and the guys blew it. Are we going to blew it? Hannah, are you going to sin? Never. You're not going to sin?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm going to sin too. Yeah, we're going to blow it, right? But the thing is that we learn from our mistakes. We keep going, okay? We confess our sin, and that's the whole part of that. Yes, sir. Yeah.
Because God didn't go ahead and win the battle for him. You feel so guilty that when all these people talk about all your people being built, won't that make you feel bad? And when you realize that that's us humans talking to God.
Yeah.
Trying to make him feel guilty.
Doesn't work too well, does it? In Joshua 9, this is going to refer to the Gibeonites, and the Gibeonites were a pretty sharp group that he had to deal with. Gibeonites are smart. They've just seen the fall of Jericho. They've seen the fall of Ai now, and they think we're going to be on the radar for next up. So they get their ambassadors, their traveling ambassadors. They dress them all in the dusty clothes, dirty clothes, torn clothes. They give them stale bread, old wineskins, and they go marching into the Israel's camp. And they said, oh, we've traveled so far. In fact, we just heard about your victory in Egypt. Way to go. How long ago was the victory in Egypt, guys? How long? How long ago was that, Miss Lavone? Ma'am? 40 years ago, they just celebrated that victory in Egypt. So it's been quite a while. So now, here's this whole ruse. Joshua and the guys are thinking, okay, well, they just heard about that. They can't be anywhere near us. They want to have a treaty with us? Yeah, we'll do that. That sounds good. They don't inquire of the Lord. They go ahead and say, Joshua and the guys say, all right, we'll sign the treaty. Then Joshua, once they find out, then Joshua called them and spoke to them, saying, why have you deceived us? And saying, we are very far from you, when you were living in our land. Why would they do that? Well, obviously they did it for self-preservation. That's why they had done it. The whole idea from this, though, is that they're going to learn from their mistakes. Joshua's going to learn from their mistakes on this kind of thing. Because we won't see within Joshua another recounting of him being deceived in some way. This happened once. That's the good example for us, guys. It's okay to make a mistake. Just don't make the mistake over and over and over again. Now, the rest of the story for this is pretty cool because the Gibeonites now have just made enemies by signing this treaty or working out this treaty with the Israelites. They've just basically signed their epitaph with all the surrounding kingdoms because the surrounding kingdoms want to band together against Israel. They've kind of broken ranks, and so now the surrounding kingdoms are going to go after the Gibeonites and try and crush them. The Gibeonites are going to say, oh, Joshua, Joshua, help us, help us. And so Joshua's going to go to their aid and help them and everything, which is great. In one instance, as they're doing battle against these five kingdoms, God's going to bring down hail and I think it says stones in the Bible from the sky and pound down on the enemy. So that's going to wipe out some of them. In another, in the few verses later, God's going to actually hold the sun stationary in the sky while Israel fights and wins the battle. In all those cases, God's glorified through all this. So that's kind of the rest of the story that takes place within this. Now, by Joshua 11, this is going to be the end of the conquest, and everything is going to be completed as far as the territory is going to be them. From Joshua 13 on through about chapter 23, it's going to start talking about the division of the land and who's getting what and everything. But by 11, all the fighting's done. And the Bible tells us, as the Lord commanded his servant Moses, and so Moses commanded Joshua, and Joshua did it. He left nothing undone of all that the Lord commanded Moses. Wouldn't that be cool for us to be said of us before the Lord that he did everything I told him he was supposed to do? You guys are young over here and over there, Daniel. Wouldn't it be cool to have some for the Lord say, you did everything I told you to do? You guys are at the very early stages of your life, which would be, I would love for that to be said. In Joshua 24 now, we're getting towards the end of his life. And before this, Joshua, before he says these words to us that a lot of kids memorize, Joshua is going to recount to them the promise that God made to Abraham. And he's going to talk to them about forsaking the gods from back in Egypt and forsaking the idols and everything in this land of the Amorites and all that. And he's going to go through the whole history of God's faithfulness to them, recounting the battles that they had won because of the Lord. And he sums it up and comes to this: now therefore, fear the Lord and serve him in sincerity and truth. Put away the gods which your fathers served beyond the river and in Egypt, and serve the Lord. If it is disagreeable in your sight to serve the Lord, choose for yourselves today whom you will serve, whether the gods which your fathers served, which were beyond the river, or the gods of the Amorites, in whose land you are living. But as for me and my house, we will serve the Lord. So the principle here, obviously, is be committed to the Lord. And this, again, is towards the end of Joshua's life. 110 years of being committed to the Lord. Quite the testimony. This is kind of the epitaph to that. Israel served the Lord all the days of Joshua and all the days of the elders who survived Joshua and had known the deeds of the Lord which he had done for Israel. So the idea here is that Joshua didn't carry these principles with him, but he instilled those to the men that served under him, and they were able to follow through. So the idea that what Joshua did just did and stopped didn't necessarily happen, but those things that he wanted the nation of Israel to follow on with, he instilled those into those leaders. And we'll see in Judges that up and down period, it goes back to the fact that there grew up a generation who did not know the Lord, blah, 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 and that kind of thing. It all goes back to this instilling the values of godliness were not done with the leaders at that time, but Joshua did. So our Christian life is challenging, and you guys got a little ways to go as far as you're just starting your lives. And Daniel, Hannah, y'all are just starting. Things are going to be challenging for you out there, okay? But what did he tell Joshua as they face? Because you guys, you're getting ready to go off to college, do college, right, Hannah? This is your senior year. And Daniel, this is your senior year too. Junior? Okay, sorry, you got one more year. But y'all are going to face some challenges out there, okay? Mr. Ron has been faithful. Ms. Lavone has been faithful in all their challenges. They're on the other side of things. You guys are just getting started. Thing to remember, guys, it's just like that. Be strong and be courageous. Okay? You awake over there, Colin? All right. Good job. And that's all I have for today. Thank you all so much. I appreciate it.